Richard Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I identify as a transgender woman.
I identify as a straight transgender female.
There is no such thing as transgender. You're either XX or XY.
But honestly, I don't really identify as human.
I'm tired of being humanized for the comfort of other people.
God made man male and female. That is determined genetically. That is physiology. That is science. That is reality.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Whatever mistakes you make in the future, you have immunity. Thus spoke the talk show host. This is Wretched Radio. By virtue of my office, no matter what you do in the future, you break a law, it's a speeding ticket, you are now immune because I said so. Hey, if the president can do it, why can't the rest of us skirt justice and make people immune from having the legal system run its due course? Happy Inauguration Day. Let's see if we experience what I am seeing an awful lot of people are saying. For instance, Mr. Kid Rock. Is his first name really Kid? That's unusual. Is his last name Rock? Mr. Kid Rock said it's palpable. You can feel it in the air that things have changed. I don't know what sensors he has, but have they? No. We're hoping the economy's going to get better, don't we? We're hoping the borders will be dealt with like a nation should. We're hoping that our military is strong so that our children, our grandchildren, can live safely without having to practice crawling underneath a desk for fear of an A-bomb being dropped. We want those things, but will a new administration bring about a new morality? Josh Howley, writing for WNG, pleading with the president, please be pro-life. It is understood that today he is going to sign 200 executive orders. And I have a confession to make. I wish we did away with that for everybody. That is ruling by fiat. Nevertheless, will there be any pro-life initiatives? For instance, will Mexico City be signed, forbidding funding to go to organizations internationally that perform abortions? We don't want our money going to kill babies. Will HHS be allowed to give money to pro-life clinics? I'd prefer the government weren't involved in any of that, frankly, but nevertheless, if that's how the game is being played, I hope that the rules will include receiving government funds for pro-life ministries, not just pro-abortion ministries. I wish Planned Parenthood received zero money in the future. That would be the preference. The question, of course, is, will we be seeing some pro-life legislation? Will we see executive orders that save babies' lives? I hope so. Regardless of the type of legislation the new president signs, is he going to fix a single human heart? Will he change the morality of a single individual? And the answer to that question is no. He has power, but it is a limited power. That's by God's design, by the way. It is the government's job to bear the sword. It is the government's job to have an orderly society where you and I can live peaceably among men as much as it is possible with us. That's their job. They can't fix the heart. They can't take a single progressive who is wonky when it comes to gender and sexuality issues and convert them to right thinking. There's one entity that has the message and that has the power to go about the business of affecting actual change. So yeah, I see that we're seeing some more politicians speak a little bit more overtly about their faith. Cool. I see more people being a little bit bold about rejecting some of the progressive accusations that are made against anybody who tries to be somewhat conservative. Cool. And I'm grateful for those. Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful for those. But I also know that while those things we should be grateful for, It's not good. That's not the revival our nation needs. The revival our nation needs is to know who the real one in authority is. the one to whom all emperors should bow. And by the way, will bow. The only entity that has the message that will change the way that people believe, thus changing the way they think, it's you and me, Saint. So let's enjoy these moments. Let's be grateful. If we have more peace and if there's more prosperity, we're grateful for those things. But let us not lay down our arms, because it is the gospel that needs to be proclaimed to this nation, and we can't be deceived. Okay, we're good. Okay, great. Stock market is up. We still need to go and make disciples. The economy, whoa, it's roaring. We still need to go and make disciples. We can't be lulled into a sense of all is well, because the reality is it's not well on a spiritual level, and it's no time for the church to rest. So happy Inauguration Day. And might I add, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, although I don't know exactly. I never know what that means. Happy Labor Day. Well, okay. What do you do? How are people celebrating today other than not working? By the way, one of the great ironies in human history, Labor Day, nobody goes to work. Hello, it's Labor Day. Maybe I'm confused about something. The point is, it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Last week, actually on this day, Virgil Walker of G3 Ministries joined us. We did a special webinar to talk about the theology of Martin Luther King Jr. And I was, first of all, Virgil just killed it. You're going to hear that in a moment. But the questions that were asked afterwards from the people that were online watching it on the YouTube machine surprised me, because they were asking about, okay, our church has been asked to march in a Martin Luther King Jr. parade. Should we do that or not? And it's like, oh, wow. I didn't know that that was a dynamic that a church had to wrangle with. And we need to remember as Christians that theology matters, and that there was more to Martin Luther King Jr. than civil rights. He was a reverend. And we can never think for a second that one's religion is disconnected from their worldview, because your religion should be your worldview. But in this instance, it most certainly informed his civil rights activism. And we do well to study it. And what you're about to hear from Virgil, who was asked a number of questions by Jason Allen, he's the one who heads up our fellows program, his theology on the essential issues, not secondary stuff, on essential issues, problem.
Let's first look at the virgin birth. So what did King believe about the virgin birth?
What I wanted to do in this section is I really wanted to make sure that I accurately state what King said about these issues. So rather than pontificating about why he landed where he landed, I really wanted to go back to primary source documentation as it relates to King. And when I think about Dr. King, I'll say this briefly, that I can't think of any civilian American citizen who's been better documented than Martin Luther King. You can go back to Stanford. They have files and files of his writings. But as it pertains particularly to the virgin birth, this is what King wrote when he was a student at Crozier Theological Seminary. He says this, quote, "First, we must admit that the evidence for the tenability of this doctrine," and he's speaking of the doctrine of the virgin birth, "is too shallow to convince any objective thinker. To begin with, the earliest written documents in the New Testament make no mention of the virgin birth. Moreover, the Gospel of Mark, the most primitive and authentic of the four, gives not the slightest suggestion of the virgin birth," end quote. Now, this is from a paper that he wrote while he was at Crozier Theological Seminary. The paper is titled, "What Experiences of Christians Living in the Early Christian Century led to the Christian Doctrines of the Divine Sonship of Jesus, the Virgin Birth, and the Bodily Resurrection." So anyone can access this. This is not me coming up with an idea about what King thought or here's my interpretation of what he taught. Stated in his own words very clearly, he questioned not just the virgin birth, but many of the miraculous aspects of the testimony that we have in Scripture as it relates to anything associated with the miraculous.
By the way, we learned the reason for that is because of his, here comes our word, hermeneutic. He was a higher critic. When you hear higher criticism, think man is higher than the Bible. And we critique what is in and what is out and what is typically out from liberal higher critics, which Martin Luther King Jr. would, he called himself, he was a proponent of higher criticism. I believe he said that in 1959, that also while he was in seminary. And he was an individual who said that we need to go through and understand the author's experience, where they're coming from, why they're doing these things, what's going on, so that you and I can stand above the Bible and glean what we think we should be receiving as any sort of word from God. That's higher criticism. And with that, guess what goes flying out the window? The supernatural. And that is why Martin Luther King Jr. was able to deny what was obvious in the Bible, the virgin birth of our Savior. But alas, or a lad, if you're still into genders, more theology from Martin Luther King Jr. next on Wretched.
Are you looking for biblical answers to life's toughest questions? Are you tired of shallow solutions that don't lead to real change? Welcome to Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford.
If you're dating someone that's not really convinced that Jesus rose from the dead, like hit the eject button. What are you doing? What are you doing? That's dangerous because they're not actually a Christian. They don't believe in the gospel.
Every week, Dr. Gifford brings you deep, practical wisdom from God's word, showing how scripture provides the framework for genuine transformation in your life, in your family, and in your walk with Christ. Whether you're struggling with difficult relationships or battling addictive habits, or just simply seeking to grow deeper in your faith, you'll find rock-solid biblical guidance that points you to Christ. Transformed is not just another Christian podcast. It's your weekly appointment with biblical truth. Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford. It's available at Fortis Plus and on all major podcast platforms. You can find out more about Transformed and Dr. Greg Gifford now at fortisinstitute.org.
The life issue. We cannot disengage from the battle, and there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds still save lives. These pregnancy centers that progressives would love to shut down or arrest people for praying in front of abortuaries, they're still doing excellent work and babies are still being rescued. This is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? This ain't about politics. This is about saving those who are staggering to the slaughter, period. preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Thanks to faithful supporters just like you, our new Fortis Institute podcasts aren't just reaching people, they're making waves. Every single one of our new shows ranks at least in the top 10% of all podcasts worldwide, some climbing even higher than that. From Integrated with Dr. John Krotz to Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson, these programs are doing exactly what they were intended to do. They're touching lives and they're transforming hearts. But here's the thing, we can't continue this vital work without your help. As we face this brave new world together, I want to ask if you would consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Only if you're already faithfully giving to your local church, though, and not strapped by any type of unmanaged debt. If those areas in your life are in order, would you consider joining us? Because your support will help us produce even more life-changing content. Just visit fortisinstitute.org right now. That's fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nyssa was an opponent of Arianism at the Council of Constantinople in 381. He wrote a book called Not Three Gods, explaining that there is one God in three persons. Each member of the Trinity is fully God with all the divine attributes, yet each member of the Trinity is a distinct person.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Sorry, perhaps I assumed this is Wretched Radio. If you didn't get the reference, why I would make the imperious claim that all of your crimes that you're going to commit in the future will be pardoned because I'm a talk show host. It was an allusion to our former president. Oh, I like the sound of that. Former President Joe Biden forgiving the crimes that nobody's actually been accused of yet in the future. So he gave a presidential pardon to people like the J6 committee, Anthony Fauci. Hey, wait a second. What? How can he pardon them? They haven't been accused of anything. So he's actually used the office in the last second to say, nobody can bring an accusation against them in the future under the guise. I don't often act as a political pundit, but I'm going to right now, just mark my words on this. If this pardon stands legally, that they have immunity to any accusations and the justice system cannot touch them or even try them because of this presidential order. If that does stand and somebody does try to say, we think some laws were broken by Liz Cheney, they're going to say they're just going for revenge. Mark my words, because that is the package that they put this presidential pardon in out of fear of revenge. We're giving future immunity to these people. I don't know if that's legal, but I do know a narrative when I smell one. And progressives are very good at creating narratives. They're good. If any of these people are tried or they're brought up on charges, it's motivated by revenge. Mark my words. But we're not talking politics per se. We're talking theology, specifically the theology of Martin Luther King Jr. It is his day federally. And we certainly have interest in his civil rights worldview, but we have far more interest in his theology. We want to know what this reverend believes. So we invited Virgil Walker from G3 Ministries to do a YouTube video. Jason Allen, he's our director of the Fellows Program here at Fortas Institute, talking about the theology of Martin Luther King Jr. Chances are pretty good you haven't heard this.
What did King believe about the deity? Christ.
Yeah. The deity of Christ is critical, because this is at the point at which you we know whether or not you're a Christian, whether you're a follower of Christ. If you don't hold to the divinity of Christ, I would definitely argue that you are outside of orthodoxy. In yeah. his paper written called Humanity and Divinity and the Divinity of Jesus, King writes this, quote, "The orthodox attempt to explain the divinity of Jesus in terms of an inherent metaphysical substance within him seems to me quite inadequate. To say that Christ is divine in an ontological sense is actually harmful and detrimental." So let me say that again.
Before he does, please go read the Chalcedonian Creed 451, I believe. This issue, it's been dealt with. And this wasn't a bunch of power hungry. There was no power to be had in the 5th century. These were not theologians who got together to club others who they thought were outside of Christology. Instead, they wrangled with the hypostatic union of Jesus Christ. How did this work? The question was not, is Jesus Christ fully man? That's clear in the Bible. He was a man just like you and I are. Slept. Ate. This was a real person. But the Bible is also clear. He's fully God. In fact, I stumbled over one. I could be wrong about this, but that's okay. I've pardoned myself for any future mistakes. Wow, to have that kind of power. I was reading last night through Matthew 21. That's where we happen to be at Alpharetta Bible Church. We're making our way through the Gospel of Matthew. And the Pharisees are getting really angry at Jesus. Rightly so. He's just poking them in the eyes, and not just to be a provocateur, but rightly so, demolishing their religious system. And they ask him a question. Hey, who do you think you are? Where do you get this authority from to go about the business of turning over tables? And why are these children in the temple crying out, "Hosanna to the Son of David." And this is what Jesus said. Jesus said to them, "Yes, but have you never read, out of the mouth of babes and nursing infants, you have perfected praise?" That's a psalm. That's talking about God. Psalm 8, I think verse 2. So Jesus is saying, haven't you heard that this can happen, that children can sing the praises of God? To whom were those children singing their praises? To Jesus. I think this was yet another statement of divinity, because it's clear in the Bible. It's not just the big stuff. It's not just the I am statements. It is all over the place that Jesus is making claims of deity in a far more profound and defensible way than just announcing, "I am God." And so we know that he's fully man. We know that he's fully God. And the early church, they wrangled. Okay, it's hard for us to make sense of this. 100% man, 100% God. But they did. And by the way, when you read through the creeds, the biblical support is crazy. Same thing when you read any of the old confessional statements. Crazy biblical support. They have so many verses cited so that you know this is not just a bunch of guys who concocted this stuff. And so in the 5th century, unlike what Martin Luther King Jr. would believe, they wrangled through it and they said he's fully God, fully man. The two natures, fully God, fully human, fully divine, don't mix. They don't mingle. They don't cross over. This is the ontological nature of Jesus Christ. And the creed concludes. And if you don't get this, you're not a part of the kingdom. You're not a Christian. Why? Because they knew that the Bible was adamant about Christology. First of all, Christ was adamant about Christology. And remember his debates in John? If you don't know the Father, you don't know the Father, because you don't know me. If you knew the Father, you'd know me. Christology was in view. And then the same one who recorded that, John, in 1 John, if you do not understand the Christ correctly, you are outside of orthodoxy, 1 John 2. Martin Luther King Jr., he said, nah, they just kind of created those systems. But they just don't make sense.
He said to say that Christ is divine in an ontological sense is actually harmful and detrimental. So that the orthodox view of the divinity of Christ, in my mind, is quite readily denied. And that's how he ends that quote. Let me quote again from the same paper. He says this, quote, "We may find the divinity of Christ not in his substantial unity with God, but in his filial consciousness and in his unique dependence upon God."
Wow, that's fascinating. And it's interesting that he, let me just see if I've got this word right, that he used substance, because that was a creedal word, by the way, consubstantial, same substance, the homoousius.
In my mind, is quite readily denied. And that's how he ends that quote. Let me quote again from the same paper. He says this, quote, "We may find the divinity of Christ not in his substantial unity."
There it is. Substantial unity. There it is right there. That's heretical. This was debated. It was one letter. Homoousius, homoiousius. Is he a similar substance? Is he same substance? The early church said same. Martin Luther King Jr. says disagree. So either all of church history is wrong or Martin Luther King Jr. was wrong. I'm going with the church.
But in his filial consciousness.
What is that? And this is more Eastern than it is biblical.
And in his unique dependence upon God. So there are two things at play here. One,
it almost sounds like theosis.
Is he definitely doesn't believe that Christ is divine in the sense that Orthodox believers, Orthodox Christians consider him the second person of the Trinity. He doesn't think of anything in the way of a hypostatic union. When he does attribute deity or even as we'll talk about perhaps later, resurrection power as it relates to Christ rising from the dead, he attributes it in more of this kind of metaphorical idea. And in this instance, in this paper, he's articulating this from a standpoint of Christ is divine in the way that as we as human beings align ourselves with the purposes of God, can achieve or experience the divine nature of God. And so that's kind of how he speaks about the divinity or deity of Christ.
Does that sound biblical to you? It's not. It's outside of orthodoxy. So Jesus, this is another ancient heresy, that Jesus was simply becoming more and more godly, but he wasn't God in flesh. That would set Martin Luther King Jr. well outside of orthodoxy. What difference does it make? Well, if your church is thinking about being in a parade, you need to remember that 3 John warns, don't do anything that gives an endorsement of a false teacher's heresy, because that's what this is. And we also need to understand one's civil rights worldview. It won't be left unscathed by one's religion. If you want to hear all of his theology, courtesy of Virgil Walker, just go to the Wretched/Fortis Institute YouTube machine and you can hear heaps more. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis Newsbreaker production of Fortis Institute. Well, TikTok's death lasted about as long as the average viral dance, 6 hours or so of darkness before Donald Trump revived the Chinese-owned app with promises of American ownership. While Shark Tank's Kevin O'Leary waves $20 billion at ByteDance, Trump is suggesting a 50-50 split with Beijing. But nobody's addressing the real threat, which is not just Chinese surveillance, but an algorithm designed to rewire young minds. 170 million Americans might just keep their digital addiction, but the deeper damage to attention spans and social development is continuing along unabated. The FBI's Office of Diversity and Inclusion has vanished into bureaucratic shadows days before Trump's return, though a maze of identity-based committees remain untouched. Director Chris Wray's silence on the timing speaks volumes as filing cabinets empty and shredders work overtime in Washington's familiar transition ritual. Well, Joe Biden's final attempt at legacy building crashed into mathematical reality as he declared the Equal Rights Amendment law despite expired deadlines and withdrawn state votes. When even Ruth Bader Ginsburg admitted you can't count 2020 votes toward 1979 ratification, the constitutional gymnastics become harder to try to justify. A dark irony is unfolded in California as police discovered 135 child pornography videos linked to Pulitzer Prize winner Darren Bell, whose cartoons specialized in portraying others as threats to children. The Los Angeles Times contributor's work now serves as a case study in psychological projection rather than political commentary. The line between treatment and enablement blurred in New York as drug counselor Alvin Lewis allegedly moonlighted dealing crack cocaine to the community he was paid to help recover. Police found his product packaged and ready for sale at the same time his day job clients struggled toward sobriety. South Dakota's legislature waded into constitutional waters with the bill mandating 10 commandments be displayed in every public school classroom. Senators John Carly and Phil Jensen's measure specifies exact dimensions for Moses' law while also including the Mayflower Compact and Declaration of Independence, mixing church and state in precisely measured doses. And Australian justice took a surreal turn when a judge factored gender identity into sentencing someone who abused their own child. The ruling set a chilling precedent where immutable biological reality matters less than shifting personal identification and determining consequences for harming children. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Important dates in Christian history. 1206. Francis of Assisi renounces wealth and goes on to lead a band of poor friars preaching the simple life. The 13th century saw the rise of a number of monastic orders dedicated to simple living and social engagement. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And thank you, Jimmy Hicks, for sending in this. I don't know. That was supposed to be Casey Kasem. This is Wretched Radio. One Jimmy Hicks. Hey, talk about Providence. That's you.
It is me.
This is from the Daily Wire. It turns out that the preemptive pardons that were just signed by what, who any moment will be our former president. In 2020, he said he would never do that. Sitting down with Jake, is it Trapper?
Tapper.
Drake Tapper was asked, hey, what about the rumor that Donald Trump is going to sign preemptive pardons? Joe Biden said, it concerns me and what kind of precedent it sets and how the rest of the world looks at us as a nation of laws and justice. You're not going to see that in our administration, that kind of approach to pardons, nor are you going to see in our administration the approach of making policy by tweets. You know, it's going to be a totally different way to which we approach the justice system. Well, that was 4 years ago. So much for consistency. Preemptive pardons. There really should be a national outcry. It's like, hey, that's you, this is your primary job. It is to punish evildoers. That is your primary job. And if you're giving preemptive pardons, and by the way, if you read the explanation for the preemptive pardon, this isn't to say they're guilty of anything. This isn't an admission of guilt. Jimmy, did you get a preemptive pardon?
I did not.
That's funny. Neither did I. Did you get a preemptive pardon? That's funny because we don't have to face any sort of justice system because we haven't committed crimes. Why would he offer those to those people from the J6 committee and Anthony Fauci? This is this should be a national outcry. So thanks, Jimmy, for sending in kind of a...
Do I sound like this?
No, no, you don't. I'm just trying to be an announcer guy. Okay. Sometimes there's very few announcer guys left. And it's not a course word. So it wouldn't be a sin if I said it. It's just so earthy. I don't want to say it. But Jimmy, I suspect you know this. There's a name for the kind of announcer who tells you all about the upcoming game. Do you know what word what those guys are called? Yeah, you do. It's kind of the sound that you make when you've had bad Mexican food. Guys, there's very few of those. You'll hear them on occasion. The new trend in communication is not articulation. It's not to be polished. It's to be the exact opposite. To me, my observation would be that's just another deconstruction of what was under... If you're going to speak to a lot of people, make sure they can understand you. Furthermore, have you noticed in commercials that people look exceptionally human in that they basically look like they've rolled out of bed, hair's messed up, doesn't matter because that's the trend. Don't look polished. Don't look made up. Look real. People want authentic. I think it all has to do with just deconstructing everything that we once considered to be a standard or a norm. That's got to be busted down, which actually serves as a perfectly fine segue, at least in my own mind, about another website that was sent to me. I don't know if Dalton found this or not. I am not a social media person in that I don't hang on it. Now, you manage your time, although, hold on a second. This would actually perhaps be beneficial. Was reading an article, if I can find it in my stack, about an individual talking about social media and immediately go, oh, not again with the social media. I get it with the cell phones. But he went a step further. Instead of just saying, hey, we need to sort out the effects of this, he was asking the question, what might be the source of this? Why is it that so many people are so connected to it and they can't live without it and they've got to see it. And if they don't have it for a few minutes, they start to get freaked out because they don't have this thing. And his pondering, he wasn't being adamant about it, but his pondering was, could it be demonic? No, seriously. Could it be demonic? Here it is right here. This is from Casey McCall. Sorry, Casey. iPhone's idolatry and evil spirits. Despite mountains of evidence suggesting that widespread addiction to smartphones and other digital technologies may be wreaking havoc on human relationships, mental health, and attention spans, perhaps even altering the very structure of our brains, I think all of that is true, demonstrable. our reliance on these devices doesn't seem to be slowing down. With the proliferation of AI, probably even greater reliance on digital technologies. He continues, and he asks the question, what's going on? Why are we so hooked? Why do we often admit our phones are not good for us, but we continue our voluntary enslavement anyway? The question I'm really asking, writes Casey, is there something spiritual going on? Okay, if you pondered that to you, I say kudos, well done. I never did. Jimmy, did you ever think about the spiritual aspect? I mean, we've talked about how it can be idolatrous, how we can be deceived and we can be tainted and taught bad ideologies through the cell phone. But did you ever stop and ponder, what about the spiritual aspect of this?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
In the constant pull toward our screens, could supernatural forces be involved? It seems far-fetched, doesn't it? It's just metal and wires and plastic. This is the fruit of human ingenuity. The products of Silicon Valley seem to be at the opposite end of the supernatural spectrum. You know, it's not like golden calves, pagan temples. Yet, half of American teenagers say they are online almost constantly. Now, here's the question. If Satan wanted to invent a way to steal our attention, render our awareness of God obsolete, and control the message we live by, could he do any better than the intensely addictive iPhone and the algorithms that control what we encounter? You've experienced that. I'm not on this thing much. But if I Google something, okay, I did not, it must be a tendon. I did something to the palm of my hand at the gym. Ow! So I go Google it. You know what I get now? I get nothing but this is how you stretch this. This is how you need surgery. What is that? Well, it's all the algorithms. You look for something and you get bombarded by the same sort of thing because they think that's what you're interested in. We know that that's being designed by humans. Is there something behind it? If the devil wanted to accuse us and remind us all of our deficiencies, could he do any better than the shiny plastic people on Instagram and TikTok? That is such a good question. We all talk about it. People compare themselves to people who have made, they move the props around. They make sure the lighting isn't good. Oh, that's a bad angle. Shoot that again. My hair was over it. Oh, it all looks, who's potentially behind that to make you feel rotten by comparison? If he wanted to stir up dissension and hate, is there any better platform than Twitter? I think that we should be asking those questions. You know what that sounded like to me? That could be a Paul Harvey narration. We just need somebody with a really good radio voice. And that ain't it. To record that. Paul Harvey, if I were the devil, I would create a device that forced people to compare themselves to others so they felt miserable about their own state and became unhappy with God. If I were the devil, Jimmy, if you're an announcer person, there you go. You got your next YouTube video. But that is not what we're looking at the moment. I'm looking at X because I don't normally, but this was sent, I think Dalton found this. This is the longest I've ever spent on a website that wasn't research. You know, that's just like when people talk about being on social media or just looking at stuff, I honestly don't know that I've ever done that. Okay, maybe dog videos on YouTube. The point is, I'm not one. This thing captured my attention. It's called Culture Critic. And it has pictures of stuff, which I'll explain. But it also has articles. I know what it was. It was, okay, here's the article that was connected to it. The real reason Rome fell. It wasn't disease or famine. It was low birth rates. And I was captivated by it. And I went to this website and I couldn't stop looking at it. So for instance, there's a picture posted. You're going to dig this. So hang in there for the explaining what I'm looking at on my cell phone. It looks like it's an entrance into a grand theater with the ornate ceilings, the arches, the columns, the staircase. And here's the comment. Dear architects, what's preventing you from building like this? Oh, and then this is a picture. I think this looks like it's in Florence. It's the Florence Duomo because it's got the green. Will humanity ever produce something like this again? The American mind cannot comprehend this. What is it? It's a picture of a little island. It looks like it's off of Italy, smashed with gorgeous homes and architecture. And his point is, culture ain't advancing. It's devolving. Culture Critic on X. This is Wretched Radio.
Marriage and parenting, beautiful gifts from God, but let's be honest, they're not easy. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're wondering if you're doing it right, listen, you're not alone. And more importantly, there's hope. Pastor Brad Bigney understands these challenges. With 36 years of biblical counseling experience and over 3 decades of shepherding his church, he brings you God's timeless wisdom each and every week on Thrive.
To be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God.
And this isn't just another how-to show. Pastor Brad Bigney and Thrive reveals the truth about your marriage. It's a living picture of Christ's relationship with his church. And your parenting, it's a divine calling to disciple the next generation. As Pastor Brad says, your home wasn't designed to just survive. God created it to thrive. Find Thrive with Brad Bigney right now at FortisPlus.org or all major podcast platforms.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
Books of the Bible. The book of Daniel is about one man who submits to God above all else and God's faithfulness to his people in all circumstances. Daniel's prophetic visions teach us that God raises up and tears down kingdoms. All earthly kingdoms will pass away, but God will establish an everlasting kingdom. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Help me, I've fallen in and I can't get out. This is Wretched Radio. I'm at Culture Critic on the Twitter machine. On the left-hand side, it is a picture. You've seen these maybe in London and the old parts of the town. An ornate lamppost. There are 4 huge metal lights. This was probably gas, but it's so ornate. And it, you know, I don't know what the lingo is. But all the designs to embellish it and make it look beautiful. Then on the right-hand side, it has a light post in America. You know, just this metal thing with a light on top of it. Entirely utilitarian. And at Culture Critic, which is on X, Why did past societies build so much useless beauty everywhere? And why did we stop? It's because we're deconstructing everything. We are deconstructing top to bottom. It doesn't matter how trite it seems to be. If that's the way we did it, we've got to undo it. This is a picture of the Cologne Dome in Cologne or Köln, Germany. It's glorious. Why don't we do... Okay, you're an art... There's one of the pictures on here. I'd have to scroll way down for it. It has this a glorious ceiling that was painted by who knows whom. And just magnificent biblical scenes, etc. And then it has a picture next to it of a piece of modern art. It's not totally rotten, but it's knocking on the door of being a rotten banana duct taped to a wall. Modern art. Why can't you modern artists do that? Just go ahead, just humor us. Make something like that. And the answer is they probably can't because of the skill that was involved, the time that was involved, and the worldview that was involved. Art was not intended, at least in the West, initially to shock. It was intended to elevate us, that it would call us up. We're better than the animals. They don't make art. We do. They don't have lights, let alone lampposts that look like this. It was intended to help human beings flourish on a higher level rather than just being entirely utilitarian. And art these days, it's intended to go, whoa, that's great. Look at that. They've just slapped some paint against the wall. Look at that, how crazy that is. That's shocking. What happened to elevating? It's changed. The worldview has changed. Here's another one that's interesting. I'm telling you, now I know what crack is like. This particular website, I'm like, oh, this is really good stuff here. Maybe you saw this. It kind of made its way around social media. It was a newsstand in New York City in 1930. And the newsman, the dude, he is the most casual guy and he's dressed up better than most people that would be going to a special event today. He's wearing trousers. Now, trousers aren't the same as pants or slacks. Trousers basically have like a belt line where it should be, not where they are these days. And the dude he's fit. And that's the point of this video. Everybody that's walking by is dapper and fit. There's nobody who's remotely over. I'm looking at it. Nobody. There, this guy comes running by. He's got a shirt and tie on. Skinny. We'd call him skinny. What happened? Where? America. What happened? And the answer is deconstruction. If that's the way it is, we got to bust it. We got to break it. We got to change it. And we have not been progressing. It's called Culture Critic. Now, here happens to be the article that caught my attention because this is we. We are Rome. When you read a book or any sort of treatment on the fall of Rome, what happened? You can't help but notice, hey, that's why a lot of great civilizations have come crumbling down. Hey, that's what America looks like these days. So this Culture Critic, whoever you are, dude, you're doing a bang-up job. He wrote, the fall of Rome is widely misunderstood. It was an invasion, disease, or famine that brought it to its knees. That was involved, but he writes, it collapsed because of the birth rate. Now you say, what does that have to do with America? The U.S. fertility rate fell to just 1.6 children per woman in 2023. That's the lowest figure in American history. That's America had fewer children born last year than in 1980 when we had 100 million fewer people. Uh-oh. So one of the reasons that Rome fell was the low birth rate. Our birth rate is falling all over the globe. Maybe I'm sure that there's some countries or some places where it's growing, but mostly in Western civilization, we are not replacing ourselves. Back to Culture Critic, Rome's fertility problem was identified as early as 49 BC by Caesar. And Augustus later tried to encourage childbearing. Those dodos knew, because remember, They're old, so they're dumb. That's another thing that culture critic, if you're listening, don't know why you would be, but if you're listening, well, why don't you point out to people that these amazing architectural feats were done by people that we esteem to be morons? Point that out. Why were they able to figure these things out? So before our Savior was born, the Roman rulers realized we got to be having more babies or we're in big trouble here. And it was especially, childlessness was especially common among the upper classes. Why? This is what Culture Critic wrote. They'd become more concerned with status than family. It didn't sound remotely like America. Actually, it sounds exactly like America. No children to inherit your wealth meant you could use it to acquire status and influence. Children were luxuries, which only the poor could afford because it would tap your bank account and you wanted it for you. So they weren't having babies. Today, people aren't having babies for a myriad of reasons. That is one of them. It's economic. Hey, it looks dicey out there. Hey, I can't get into the housing market. The price of gasoline, it's soaring. I can't bring a kid into this. There's another fear tactic that's being used, and that is culture change, climate change, rather. That we're going to be burning up here in about 10 minutes. You can't have a child. They're terrorizing people into not having children. Abortions and infanticide were rampant in that culture. Let's hope that our new president is indeed pro-life. Let's see those executive. If we're going to have executive orders, let's have them to save some babies' lives, shall we? If we're going to cut funding, now let's cut it to pro-abortion centers. Planned Parenthood doesn't need a nickel. Are you kidding me? They are a profit monster. The CEO of Planned Parenthood, they make a fortune. And then they get the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Augustus tried to fix things. The jus trium liberorum, the right of three children, awarded privileges to citizens with three or more children. So the government got involved in baby production. I don't think that that should be the government's role, but nevertheless, they recognize certain things are good for civilization. Marriage is one of them. Having children is another. They go together, by the way. And so they actually had legislation to say, you have three kids? Well done. You get special privileges to encourage making babies. There were tax penalties for the unmarried and childless, for men over 25 and women over 20. When the birth rate problem had spread to the agricultural classes by 100 AD, Trajan's welfare program tried to stimulate the birth of freeborn men. All policies failed. Tacitus said so powerful were the attractions of a childless state. Me, 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 me. Not they, not others, me. Low fertility combined with war and plagues meant so many farms in Italy were abandoned by 193 that Pertinax offered the land for free to anyone who would cultivate it. By the way, you're seeing that in England. You're seeing that in Italy. There's mayors in different towns in Italy that will give you, basically they'll give it to you. Just take the estate that's all just overgrown, run down, and they make TV shows out of this. People do it. That's not the sign of a thriving society when you have to give away a property with the promise that you'll invest in it to make it better. Sound familiar? Population decline was exacerbated by the wars and plagues of the third century. As the empire's outward expansion ceased and its free population dwindled, emperors were forced to import more and more barbarians to sustain their armies and, dare I say, economies. Uh-oh, how bad did it get? Rome was the first city to reach 1 million people. Did you know that? It took until the 19th century in London for that feat to be accomplished again. This was a big deal. By the year 600, you know how many people lived in Rome? There were 1 million people about the time of our Savior. Jimmy, you want to take a guess at how many people lived in the gorgeous city? What do they call it? Well, Rome is called this, not the City of Lights, the Imperial City. Hmm. How many people were there in 600?
I don't know.
30,000. Wow. Couldn't even fill the Colosseum. Low birth rates, kill a nation. Government edicts won't make more babies. There's only one thing that will, and that is optimism and a high view of children. Hey, sounds like Christianity. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.